Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, and welcome to Alaska Edition. I'm Lori Townsend, filling in for your regular host, Michael Carey. Joining me today for Alaska Edition is Julia O'Malley. Thanks for being here. Julia is a columnist with the Anchorage Daily News. Nellie Moore is also with us today. Nellie is working on the Anxet 40 project. She is the project moderator for special interviews. And also on the Skype line is Libby Casey, our Washington, D.C. correspondent for the Alaska Public Radio Network. Welcome, everyone. Let's kind of launch into this conversation. The debt ceiling has been raised, but it might feel like it's crashing on people, on the Alaskans' heads, as we watch continued market instability and predictions of double-dip recessions. Yesterday, the stock market took a nearly 500-point drop. I guess that's the largest drop since 2008. Libby, what has the congressional delegation said? Have you had conversations with them? What may be coming for Alaskans as trillions are in spending cuts begin to be implemented?
Well, we had such a buildup to this debt ceiling crisis, and in a lot of ways, Congress even admits it. It was sort of a manufactured crisis. They didn't have to push it to the very edge, but a lot of people saw it as an opportunity to cut spending. So we got past that crisis, right? They raised the debt ceiling. They made some kind of an agreement to cut spending, but the market still toppled this week. And there's so much else going on here. We saw a jobs report today. We're looking at jobs as really the next big focus. President Obama is going to try to put that in the forefront. And the Alaska delegation says that's the key as well to getting the economy back on track. Both Senators and Congressman Young say that's their focus. Now, the question everyone has is how do you get more jobs in America? And if anyone had the easy answer, you know, it wouldn't be this complex problem. But you're right, Lori, there are going to be a lot of cuts coming down the pike. It's not just like we got past this political crisis and life goes on as normal. We're going to see a lot of cuts across the board, over $1 trillion worth of them. And then there's going to be a lot more severe cuts if this super committee that Congress is putting together can come up with some other ways to save money.
Well, yesterday we heard from Neil Fried, a state economist, that said he thinks the pain will start showing up for Alaskans in 2013. Others are predicting it might be out another year or so, but a third of Alaska's job income and funding comes through the federal government. Libby, this super committee that's being put together, what's known about, or is anything known yet about who they're going to be? And this short turnaround, it seems amazing to me that they're tasked with getting this work done by November. That just seems like an impossible task.
It is. Now remember, there is a foundation that's been laid. There have been other groups and committees that have come up with their own proposals at this point, like the Gang of Six, a group of senators who had some ideas about how to both cut spending, but also look at taxes and other ways to raise revenue. We don't know yet who's going to be on the committee. Republican leadership, Democratic leadership will decide that August 16th, so in a little under 2 weeks. Will we see any Alaskans on that committee? Unlikely. What the Republicans are saying right now is they want the real deficit hawks and some real political heavyweights in there. Senator Murkowski, you know, part of the move she made last year in running as an independent Republican sort of put her, give her a little bit of distance from the Republicans, both good for her politically because she can be her own operative, but also not someone they're going to look to represent the party necessarily in a big moment like this. I talked to Senator Begich's staff and you know, they said basically he's not lobbying to be on this. He's not pushing to be on it. He'd certainly be honored to be chosen. But what's far more likely is to see members of Congress who've been involved in these Gangs of Six and other machinations being picked because they have the groundwork. But you're right, Lori, they have until around Thanksgiving to get something hammered out. And if they don't, there are going to be some really severe cuts, including in areas like defense, which could hit Alaska. And while Medicare won't exactly be targeted, providers of Medicare will be. And I can't wait to see Julia's reporting on this in her columns because, as she's written about before, providers of Medicare in Alaska have a really hard time of just getting you know, the amount of money they need. So there are some real serious stakes here. The question is, will that be enough to motivate the Super Committee and then Congress to actually make some decisions?
Is it known when the deadline is for even picking the members of this Super Committee?
Yeah, we've got under 2 weeks, so we'll hear on August 16th who they are. And the names that are being thrown around on the Republican side are guys like Paul Ryan, conservative, who's talked about radically changing Medicaid and Medicare. And on the Democrat side, we're talking about guys who've been on, like I said, the Gang of Six, who are people who've already been involved in some budget negotiations before.
Julia, you spend a lot of time out in the community talking to Alaskans in Anchorage. Have you heard anything from people that you've talked to about concerns of what might be coming in that respect?
I haven't done much talking to people about this particular issue, though my general feeling is that it's hard for the public to sort out exactly what's going on, and it's going to take concrete cuts. It's going to take the moment when your doctor no longer takes Medicare for people to really begin to understand the impact of what's going on. I just think that it's a difficult issue for like kitchen table conversation.
Absolutely. And Nellie, you have mentioned to me a few times about some long-standing businesses in Anchorage that have closed down recently. Have you had conversations with folks about their concerns, what might be coming for us economically in the next few years?
Well, at the national level, they're saying that they're trying to help boost small business, but I think for several here in town, it's too little too late. The economy is really tough. If you just look at the sales right now, you can see that prices are being slashed, but most particularly, I think, being felt really hard in the bush, of course, is most Alaskans know how that occurs. Prices go up in Anchorage, they go up dramatically in the bush. And so the whole issue of funding cuts is extremely serious. It impacts so many aspects of the Alaskan economy. Healthcare alone, which has been a tough subject for Native corporations who are now running hospitals, they have continuously had problems. Even though they have treaty agreements for funding, they've been either cut or, you know, held at level funding. Now they're finding they're in a crisis position with all this other stuff going on. So we have huge layoffs occurring at different corporations out in the rural areas, which are not being felt here in Anchorage yet. So I think across the board, it's going to be extremely dramatic. I think people are really, at least in the bush particularly, are looking to Senator Murkowski, since they feel like they rallied, you know, to help her win the election. But people, I think, are very concerned. There's a lot of talk out there what's going to happen to the, you know, corporations that aren't doing really well, the Native corporations, the Anchorage business community, which also depends on them. So, there's one project, a new building going up over near the Native hospital, which impacts all of Anchorage because it's local businesses all contracting to build it. It's, you know, for the most part, local businesses. But we're not going to see as much of that, I think, in the future, and people are very worried.
Well, I know we're still, we're still waiting to hear what will happen with Denali Commission funding. They are right now and have been waiting for months to find out whether or not Congress is going to demand that they return $15 million or as small an amount as $1.4 million. And they've been waiting all through the spring and the summer. Now the commission co-chairman Joel Niemeyer has asked for written opinions from both the Government Accountability Office and the Office of Management and Budget, because OMB and GAO see it quite differently. So he's asking for opinions. He'll get those on the 15th. And that could cause some real disruption for projects in rural Alaska. He said if they have to return $1.4 million, that they can do because they get money returned on projects that come in under bid every year. Mm-hmm. But if they have to return $15 million and they can't do it over time, if they have to do it by the end of the fiscal year, they're going to have to stop active projects in the bush. Libby, it seems that this is part of what seems so insurmountable about this, that there can't even be a decision after all these months made about what the Denali Commission needs to do. And it just seems like if we can't get these types of answers, which is related to funding from 2010, by the way. We're not even talking about current funding. How will this mess get sorted out?
Well, Lori, you know, the New York Times CBS poll that just came out shows an all-time disapproval rating, all-time high of a disapproval rating of Congress, 82%. There's so much gridlock back here in Washington, and there's a real feeling among the American public, among Alaskans, of just disgust at the inability to get things done. So there's two things. There's on one hand the fact that stuff just isn't happening. Budgets aren't getting passed. Crises are taking till the very last minute to get resolved. And then there's the second shoe that will drop, which is the lack of money and the tight budgets. And if the philosophy of Washington now is cut, cut, save, save, that means less money to go around, which of course hits Alaska. And we're going to see cuts across the board. So we're talking about Indian health care. We're talking about environmental departments. We're talking about energy departments. So there are going to be a range of things that people may not realize. Well, it's all well and good to talk about belt tightening, but you know, when the belt tightens, it squeezes something. And Alaska may be one of the places it really squeezes. One thing that hasn't been talked about a whole lot in this past debate is, in the past when Congress was horse trading and negotiating big deals, there was a sense of, you help me through this vote and I'll make sure to help you next time. Sort of a partnership. One might be a little more cynical and call it kind of a quid pro quo. You help me with my project, I'll help you with yours. Senator Ted Stevens was a consummate leader in getting people to bend his way and also giving them an incentive through earmarks and the like. And those just are not on the table anymore. And so it's caused both a lot of gridlock, and it's also taken out some of the sweeteners that help senators and congressmen get people back home behind them and say, look, I know this is tough, but we're getting you this new airport project, or we're getting you this new health incentive. And a lot of those things are off the table now.
Mm-hmm. And I think, in the last 10 years, I think, Libby, you would probably agree, is there has been a lot of finger pointing at Ted Stevens for pork barrel funding, which most Alaskans disagree that because there are so many communities still without water and sewer. We're having a funding crisis with schools, same old, but they've been waiting to, people who have been envious of what Ted has been able to do for Alaska are now going, okay, we're going to clean this up and we're going to get our share now.
When you look at the numbers and you see how much every Alaskan gets sort of per capita, mm-hmm. The per capita breakdown, well, people in the lower 48 think Alaska is not giving nearly as much in tax revenue as they're getting. But Alaskans often say, try living with a honey bucket for a while. Try living where I have to buy a many $100 plane ticket just to visit my mother who doesn't live that far away. So it's a lovely argument about cutting spending and getting rid of earmarks, but as the Alaska delegation still to this day say, they try to fight for those projects because they believe Alaska needs that basic infrastructure.
And it sets up an interesting contrast with the position of the administration, which has been sort of, following the Tea Party line, which in my opinion is so misguided in a state where we're getting $2 for every $1 we pay in taxes. So that kind of messaging has been popular with the public, but now we're watching it play out. And in Alaska, it doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to be interested to watch the governor's administration, and see how it responds as these sorts of things that it's been talking about wanting actually come to fruition. I mean, we have land management agencies that are employing people. We have Coast Guard and the military. We have these, and we know that there will be cuts. And, stimulus money has been coming into the communities through agencies like this. So it will be interesting when the rubber hits the road to see, what it really looks like.
Well, and I think that projects in rural Alaska, such as village moving projects for erosion, I can't imagine. Ted Stevens, while he was still really in the Senate, talked about how difficult it was going to be for him with all of his power and connection during his time there, how impossible a task it would be to get $200 million to move villages. Now that just seems like it's going to be totally off the table. And also it seems that because of the fact that they're working on these cuts right through the holiday season, that to me seems like an indication that we're going to see another bad hit to the economy because consumers are probably going to be waiting around. How much money do I dare spend this season? Who knows what's coming for us? So it looks a little bleak, I'd say, at this point in time. I'd like to switch gears now. The loss of ANI, Alaska Newspapers, in rural Alaska. How big an impact do you think this will be? We're talking about already rural Alaska is getting hammered by high energy costs, and we'll, definitely we'll see lower funding coming in the next few years. And certainly, I think there's an assumption by urban folks that everybody has high-speed internet. What's the big deal? You just go online and you can get your news. But that's certainly not the case in rural Alaska, and won't be for many, many years, if ever, in some of these communities. There's just, it's just not a financial incentive for providers to do that. Nellie, how big a loss is this? Wasn't Howard Rock's writing in the Tundra Drums instrumental in the push for ANCSA and other
Tundra
big
times,
things?
Yes.
Tundra Times,
exactly. And I think, you know, it's created some opportunities. I mean, apparently the Cordova paper has been bought. And I think it's just going to be interesting to see if anybody does pick it up. I think we may have some isolated incidents of, you know, well, maybe I can hold this newspaper together. But part of the problem is that Alaska Newspapers did their own printing. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, a one-stop shop. So if you're out there putting a newspaper together, you've got to consider all of those aspects. And as you said, there is no high-speed internet out there. You know, they're trying to work on it, but you don't just, and a lot of people don't have a computer. They don't, mm-hmm. you know, not to that stage yet. So I think there's going to be a lot of need for correct, accurate information in a time when people are going to be going through a tremendous amount of change through what we're talking about, these cuts, both at the state, federal, and local level. And there are so many complex issues out there in rural Alaska right now. I think it's going to be really tough to keep track of what's happening.
It does seem like a particularly bad time because there are large and growing larger issues in rural Alaska, and it will be important for all of us to try to track those now, especially in light of the loss of ANI. Have editors at the Daily News discussed this at all?
Generally, the loss of the, of course, you know,
how you might try and fill some of that gap.
It feeds some information to the Daily News that they can't cover.
It does, and you know, I think it feeds information to the Associated Press, which mm-hmm. you know mm-hmm. Allows us to know, hear more voices, and hear more stories. Certainly, it's a loss to the journalism community at large, and a loss to the readers at large. You know, when we talk about government cuts as a way to sort of save the country, we have to also think about the impact of those, the impact on the economy of less government spending. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at communities where there's a clinic and a school and, you know, where a lot of the industry is government supported, those are ad buyers as well. And so trying to find a local ad base for a newspaper in rural Alaska is going to be exceedingly difficult. I anticipate that, you know, there's always a hunger for information and stories. I think the natural place for that is on the internet, and that as these organized institutions go away, other things will pop up in their place. Will those things be profitable? Will they be able to last the way newspapers have lasted? I'm not sure that there's a business model in place at this time that can really make that happen. But there will be bloggers, there will be social networks disseminating information. Are we going to have the same kind of coverage of rural Alaska as we have had? No, certainly not. I don't see anyone stepping into that role in a very aggressive way with much reach. So you know, our resources have diminished in that way as well. So, you know, it in general, what it means is we will hear less from rural Alaska. Hopefully radio maybe can step in some ways.
Murkowski's aide may be headed to prison if a judge agrees to his plea deal for Arnie Fugelvog. Libby, what happened? What's going on there?
Larnie Fugelvog was a staffer for Senator Murkowski down here in Washington, focusing on fisheries issues, also Arctic issues. Beyond that, he's just someone who's been very involved in the fishing community for a long time. He fished professionally, came from Petersburg. He served in the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. It turns out Fugelvog has entered into a plea deal with federal authorities, and as part of that, he said that he did falsify where he caught his fish. And this spans a couple-year period. It looks like 2001 to 2006. And some details of that for those who aren't in the fishing realm. It includes, for example, a charge of covering up where he actually caught about 30,000 pounds of black cod or sable fish, saying it came from one part of the Gulf of Alaska region when it actually came from another. Senator Murkowski said that she found out that he was being investigated for a charge right around the new year, but she said that Fugelvog came to her at the end of June, sat down with her, and told her that he was going to enter into a plea agreement. The question a lot of people are asking now, though, is why didn't Fugelvog immediately leave her staff? It took another month for him to leave. He resigned on Sunday. That was one day before the charges were officially filed and before the plea deal became public. Now, Senator Murkowski said, you know, due process, you're innocent until proven guilty. It turns out Fugelvog had entered into this plea agreement back in April. That's what the public records show. Murkowski says she did not know back in April. She did not know even in June that there was this backstory, that the plea deal was already in the works. And her staffer, her spokesman, told me today that Senator Murkowski would have fired Fugelvog if she had known that he had pled out or was working on this plea deal in which he admitted guilt and was looking at a $150,000 fine and 10 months prison time. People are still pushing to find out more about Senator Murkowski's stance on this, but her spokesman did tell me today that if she could do it differently, she probably would have let him go right away when she found out that he was entering into a plea deal. As it worked out, he had a month to leave the staff, and so they were able to transfer his work to other staffers. So that was sort of the practical side of it. This is a heavy blow. Craig Medrig has a piece today in the Alaska Dispatch looking at why should you care? Why is this so important? And he details the reason why he thinks you should care is because Fugelvog was such a key player in setting up fishery rules and regulations. And so if someone who's instrumental in that process doesn't follow the rules himself, admits to not following the rules, it raises a lot of questions.
And next week, I understand he has a court date here in Anchorage?
That's right, arraignment hearing, and so we'll see how this actually progresses. I haven't heard any details yet about what will happen after that. I think we'll find out more this week in Anchorage.
Thanks. Well, we only have a few minutes left, and we'll switch gears again. The Anchorage mayor recently tried to outlaw sitting on the sidewalk. There was a considerable backlash from Anchorage residents, both in the paper and people went to assembly meetings, were very upset with the mayor about that. Julia, were you surprised at the reaction?
No, I was kind of surprised that it really, to me, just from the standpoint of like, if I were going to strategize the sorts of things I would want a politician that I was working for to get involved with, this just seemed like a loser to me. I'm not sure they actually anticipated the way that things were going to go. It didn't play well. He didn't come across well. And in the end, you know, the thing that I think about a lot is how the issue is just this tremendous distraction from the problem of homelessness. And that this is an opportunity for a mayor who has not necessarily done anything major to set himself apart at this point, outside of, you know, fights with the unions and a lot of cuts, laying off public employees, that kind of thing. This would be a chance for the mayor to really build something, to do something. The problem Anchorage has to do with housing for not just many families who are now waiting to get into homeless shelters, or the people who are on the public housing list who are waiting there sometimes years, but also we have these service-intensive users, these chronic homeless people, kind of like the sex offender there, John Martin, on the street corner, who are taking a lot of our services. The mayor could look, you know, nationally to see how those people are dealt with, and really the best way to deal with them is to house them. So he could really delve into the issue of housing and homelessness, but instead we've kind of gotten caught up in this like mayor versus the guy on the street corner thing. And another thing that disturbs me about it is the guy on the street corner is a sex offender who really likes attention. I mean, this isn't his first public protest. And so it just seems like not the right issue, and especially if you're trying to introduce an ordinance about sitting on the sidewalk, to hang it on this guy seems like a choice that if I were advising the mayor, I certainly wouldn't have made.
And I think also, you know, like almost everything that we're dealing with today, it's incredibly complex, and a lot of it revolves around the issue of alcohol. And, you know, the mayor taking this hard stance, I think, and yet also being a part owner of a bar, you know, he's making money off of alcohol. I think it turned people off a little bit that he took this really hard stance in relation to the homeless who are virtually unrepresented.
It seems like an issue that's going to, as Julia said, it is a distraction from the real important and serious issue of homelessness. And this did become kind of an overblown issue that got way out there. And I think it is a good idea to talk in terms of reining it back into what the discussion should be about, which is how to help people who are on the street. We're out of time, and it's been a great discussion. We didn't get to nearly all of the topics that I had hoped to, but we'll get you back here and do it again. Thank you to my guests, Julia O'Malley of the Anchorage Daily News, Nellie Moore with the Inkset 40 Project, and an independent journalist, and Libby Casey, Washington, D.C. correspondent. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.